Thank you for your kind invitation. I didn't recognize me, but I do appreciate it. I also want to thank Dr. Dockery, Dr. Fowler, and Dr. Thornberry for the invitation to come and to be a part of this conference. Baptist identity and Baptist theology definitely is a passion of mine, and I am delighted for the chance to come and to dialogue with you and to share with you on this very important topic. My assignment today is to provide a theologian's perspective to the topic, Are Southern Baptists in Danger of Losing Their Identity? I approach this task from two perspectives. On the one hand, I do have great concern over the seeming indifference today in many Baptist churches regarding our distinctive theological identity. In fact, my concern has led me to found the entity that Dr. Thornberry has just described for you for the express purpose of tackling this issue. In a context where the measurement of biblical fidelity has been replaced with the buzzwords of contemporary, relevant, or innovative, I sometimes despair over the theological plight of the next generation of Baptists, should there be one. On the other hand, I do not believe that all is a lost cause. The theological identity that has served our Baptist forebears for centuries is more than sufficient and adequate to provide present and future Baptists a biblical dynamic and biblical theological identity. In order to address the issue at hand, though, we must first identify and define the theological identity that we are in jeopardy of losing. If Southern Baptists are in danger of losing their distinctive identity, the first question that we must answer or that we must ask is, what makes a Baptist a Baptist? The seeming simplicity of this question often belies the complexity of the answer. Ask any Baptist this question, and you will receive as many answers as there are Baptists. Baptists usually agree that they have a distinctive theological identity. They disagree, however, over the nature of this identity. The question of what makes a Baptist typically occurs within debates over and regarding Baptist distinctives. Many different beliefs are cited as the true Baptist distinctive or true Baptist distinctives. Some stress broad principles that constitute this identity, such as the priesthood of believers, believers' baptism, a regenerate church membership, the primacy of the Scriptures, or congregational autonomy or polity. Others call attention to concepts such as religious freedom, soul competency, the lordship of Christ, as these things are the defining criteria of what constitutes a Baptist identity. A popular answer often heard in Baptist pulpits is that Baptists are the only true Christians who truly and consistently believe in the book, the blood, and the blessed hope. Another common approach in this debate over identifying Baptist distinctives is to appeal to Baptist precedent. Statements such as, Baptists have always believed this, are often cited as the undisputed truth that will bring immediate resolution to the debate and answer all the questions. One Baptist leader is fond of saying, quote, Mama taught me that this is what Baptists has always believed, as though Mama authority removed all doubt. Now I have to pause and say, in my house it did. And it still does. With all due respect to this man's mother, Mama, though, may not be right. Although these appeals are intended to strengthen the credibility of someone's position, more often than not, what is offered as Baptist precedent is usually tainted by personal agendas and ignorance of Baptist history and theology. Emotional appeals to historical continuity tend to confuse rather than to clarify. Maybe an excellent illustration of the demise of the debate on Baptist identity is summarized by Gary Parker in an essay that he wrote for a book, Why I Am a Baptist, edited by Cecil P. Staton. He recounts the incident of a man named Will Campbell. Now, I do not know this man. You might. But let me just read the account. Will Campbell found himself in an airport one day about to go through the scanning device at the security checkpoint. The security guard asked Campbell to give him his cane. Campbell used a cane those days to help him get around so that he could run it through the X-ray machine. "But I need my cane to walk," said Campbell. "I'm sorry," said the security guard, "but I have to run it through the X-ray machine." "But I have a bad leg," continued Campbell. "I have to inspect that cane," said the guard, sticking to the rules. So Campbell turned to his wife, who waited patiently at his side. "Do I look like a terrorist to you?" "No, but that doesn't matter," she said. "Give the man your cane." By the way, this is invoking mama authority. "Give the man your cane. He's just doing his job." By that time, a multitude of people had lined up like boxcars to a freight train behind the irascible Campbell. On tiptoes, the people leaned forward, eyes wide and ears pricked in an effort to see what the commotion was about. With a shrug of dismissal, Campbell handed his cane to the guard. But then, instead of walking through the checkpoint, he dropped to his knees, stretching out full length on the floor, and crawled like a snake through the security zone. Elbow to ground, knee following elbow, elbow then knee. Ever so slowly, he made his way past the startled guard. Now, I must say, having flown extensively over the past couple of years, I can identify with this in some measure. You almost have to undress in order to get through the security thing, so I can kind of sympathize with Campbell at this point. Finally, when he reached the other side, Campbell pulled himself up to his feet, took his cane from the red-faced security guard, and walked away. Halfway down the corridor, Campbell's dear but mortified wife leaned close to him and said, "Honey, why in the world do you do things like that?" To which Campbell replied, "Because I am a Baptist, that's why." Is that what it means to be a Baptist? Having examined almost every document that I could find that claims to be a work on Baptist distinctives, my research has uncovered significant discoveries that I believe have direct bearing on the present and future of the theological identity of Southern Baptists. I'm going to break this discussion down into three sections. First, I'm going to stipulate that writings on Baptist distinctives share common theological components. I contend that these components are definitive for determining what Baptist distinctives are. Second, I contend that writings and discussions on Baptist distinctives reflect a characteristic theological method. In other words, being Baptist is not just believing certain things, but there's also a method in the way we do our theology. Third, the theological components and the theological method that I will identify converge into a Baptist confessional theology. I'm going to briefly discuss each of these in this paper. I will then conclude with the significance of this research for understanding the distinctive theological identity of Baptists and the implications of this investigation for Baptist identity. Defining elements of Baptist distinctives. Certain theological components are common among writings on Baptist distinctives. My analysis has identified four shared doctrinal traits. These doctrinal traits are definitive for identifying what constitutes a writing or a monograph on Baptist distinctives. The first component present in writings on Baptist distinctives is what I call the epistemological component. And by epistemology, I'm using Paul Feinberg's definition as he elaborated it in the Evangelical Dictionary of Theology, in which he says, epistemology in its religious expression is the inquiry into the knowledge of God and the justification of religious knowledge. The development of Baptist distinctives reflects a serious commitment to establish the basis for a religious authority, to establish the viability of the distinctive theological identity of Baptists. All treatises that qualify as distinctive writings contain in some measure a discussion for the basis of religious authority. The first and most prominently held epistemological basis for religious authority among Baptists is the Bible, as we have heard described in several presentations yesterday. Baptists, as well as other Christian denominations, appeal to the Bible as their ultimate or sole source for religious authority. Baptists distance themselves from these other groups, however, by claiming that Baptists and Baptists alone completely depend upon the Scripture as the principal foundation for beliefs and practices. Whereas other Christian groups incorporate sources for religious authority such as tradition and experience, Baptists contend that they alone consistently and exclusively hold to the Bible for their religious authority. An example of this would be John Quincy Adams, again, not the president, in his book, Baptists, the Only Thorough Religious Reformers, when he says, quote, "Baptists aim to restore the order of primitive churches. They make no appeal to tradition, the fathers, or expediency. They simply ask, what do the Scriptures teach?" Some Baptists narrow biblical authority to the New Testament. This subgrouping emphasizes that the New Testament, as the source of religious authority, is that which distinguishes Baptists from other Christian denominations. Some Baptists go so far as to teach that doctrinal developments that are neither supported nor taught in the New Testament disqualify those beliefs as being considered Baptistic. The assertion of the Bible as the source of religious authority is of paramount importance for understanding our distinctive theological identity. Baptists categorically oppose any authoritative human imposition between God and man. To allow such an intrusion is to interfere with the essence of the faith relationship between the Creator and His creation. Because of this aversion, Baptists have typically and historically rejected certain uses of creedal statements. And let me qualify what I mean by this. Timothy George, I think, has rightfully noted that Baptists have never advocated or supported certain types of creedalism. For example, Baptists have historically opposed creedalism in the form of governmental authorities that seek to regulate or coerce religious life. In other words, established state churches and the imposition of creeds have been opposed by Baptists. Second, Baptists have opposed creedalism in the form of the elevation of man-made doctrinal constructs equal to or above the Bible. George does suggest, I think rightfully, that an aversion to these types of creedalism is not the same as the voluntary conscientious adherence to explicit doctrinal statements. Baptists, according to George, have advocated such theological formulations and have even employed the term creed to describe the process. So what I'm arguing is that Baptists oppose the creedalisms that George identifies as either governmental impositions or the elevation of creeds to the same authority as the Bible, but Baptists have used creed to describe adherence to explicit doctrinal statements. Another epistemological expression is individual autonomous religious experience. Although the majority of Baptist distinctives or writings on Baptist distinctives begin with some assertion of biblical authority, certain Baptist distinctive writings contend that religious experience is an epistemological basis. This premise is necessary for them, they argue, for the purpose of having a valid understanding of the role of the Bible and the process of conversion in Baptist thought. The argument for religious experience as the primary epistemological foundation is a 20th century development in the history of Baptist distinctives. I'm going to talk more about this in a moment, but let me identify the second component. The second component found within Baptist distinctive writings is polemical intention. Polemical intention is the notion that the author of the work is purposefully identifying and developing those theological traits that distinguish Baptists from other Christian denominations. The polemical component critiques the theological distinctives of other Christian denominations in light of their differences or distinctions with Baptists. Polemical intention is theologically oriented and can have several differing expressions. In other words, Baptists have historically always been predisposed for a good theological fight. And they tend to do it in several ways. For example, polemical intention can critique the theological foundations or explications of other Christian groups in comparison with Baptists. Polemical intention can target specific denominations. If you read the original Baptist Why or Why Not, you will see this graphically illustrated. Polemical intention can target certain religious movements. For example, one that was often targeted was the National or World Council of Churches. Baptists have even criticized themselves, surprise, in the way they formulate their own distinctive theological identity. The purpose of the polemic is to highlight the supremacy and the uniqueness of the Baptist theological distinctives in contrast to what they perceive to be theological deficiencies in other Christian groups. The third element of Baptist distinctives, or the third element that constitutes writings in Baptist distinctives, is the formulation of the doctrine of the church, the ecclesiological component. Those elements which distinguish Baptists theologically from other Christian denominations are most often visible in Baptist ecclesiology. Baptist distinctives always apply the distinctive traits of Baptists to their understanding of the church. In other words, whenever Baptist distinctives are being developed, they will talk about the church. Although the types of ecclesiological issues may vary in specificity or quantity, the presence of discussions about the church is certain, and it can take a variety of forms. In a work on Baptist distinctives, they may talk about baptism by immersion, or about believers' baptism, or about a regenerate church membership, or about congregational polity, but they will talk about the church. The fourth and final component that is definitive to writings on Baptist distinctives is what I call the volitional component. This element is expressed in two concepts that are distinct yet share similarities: religious liberty and soul competency. The first expression of the volitional component is religious liberty. Baptists lived as a disadvantaged and persecuted sect for hundreds of years in England and in colonial America, and possibly, depending upon your origin of Baptists, maybe even in the continent. Because of these circumstances, Baptists constantly cried out for the freedom to follow their religious convictions and beliefs without external interferences. The articulation and defense of religious liberty by Baptists was quite revolutionary during the first centuries of Baptist life. The reason for their insistence of religious freedom is attributed to their understanding of the gospel as requiring a voluntary, intentional response without external coercion. As a distinctive expression of their unique theological identity, Baptists contend that faith must be free and voluntary in its response to God. A volitional component also includes soul competency. Because of the inherent connection between the two ideas, religious liberty and soul competency, when Baptists contend for religious freedom in their distinctive writings, they typically discuss soul competency as well, or vice versa. Baptists adamantly hold to the notion that the individual has the ability to relate to the Creator and the responsibility to approach God directly without human impositions. Soul competency has proved a useful weapon in Baptist life and history against sacerdotalism, sacramentalism, paedo-baptism, and established state churches. Summary. Baptist distinctives share, or writings on Baptist distinctives share, common theological components that define the criteria for this theological genre: epistemological, polemical, ecclesiological, and volitional components are all found in some form in these works. Although arrangement and expression of these components can be somewhat diverse, these traits are the criteria that categorize a theological work within the genre of Baptist distinctives. The next issue that I will address is the theological hermeneutic employed in writings of Baptist distinctives. Authors of these works develop a primary or defining distinctive that is more prevalent than the other distinctives. This defining or organizing distinctive serves as the interpretive premise for the other distinctive doctrines discussed. Now, I recognize that Baptists are too diverse and complex to be reduced to one central characteristic. The complexity of Baptist distinctives can best be understood, however, via an analysis that involves locating an organizing principle. In fact, many of the authors of writings on Baptist distinctives explicitly state that the core distinctive, or the foundational distinctive, or the principal distinctive, some kind of language like that. It seems to me that many of these perceive this task this way and explicitly and intentionally stated as such. Some Baptist distinctive writings argue for various expressions of biblical authority as the defining distinctive. This grouping of Baptist distinctives considers the other components as the logical application of the core distinctive. Biblical authority, thus, is the foundational premise. All other distinctive doctrinal formulations are the natural or the theological application or outflow of the core tenet. This phenomenon is intentional and is often explicitly stated as such. One group of Baptist distinctives contends that the general religious practices of Baptists are the logical application of their distinctive view of biblical authority. The existence of Baptists is stipulated as the necessary result of faithful obedience and submission to the authority of the Word of God. The fundamental principle of the Baptists is their belief in the supreme authority and absolute sufficiency of the Holy Scriptures, and their separate existence is the practical and logical result of their attempt to apply this principle in all matters of faith and religion. Another Baptist author stated it this way, quote, "The Baptists have been distinguished for their close attachments to the Scriptures. They, and they alone, have never appealed to anything else for proof of any portion of their faith and practice. As Christians, the simplicity of this principle has been favorable to the success of Baptists." Another quote, "The one fundamental principle of Baptists and the foundation stone on which they rest as an effective group in the world today is their belief in the supreme authority and absolute sufficiency of the Holy Scriptures, especially the New Testament, as the complete and infallible guide in all matters pertaining to their faith and practice. And every other peculiarity which characterizes them is the practical outcome of this principle." Baptist distinctives for these authors are the outflow or the natural conclusion to the distinctive of biblical authority. Other Baptist distinctive writings apply biblical authority to ecclesiology. And here are some quotes I would like to share with you. With regard to the authority of the Bible and ecclesiology, quote, "In his doctrine of the church, the Baptist rejects all that is not required by Scripture, and so the two primary principles harmonize, the second being the extension of the first." Following a brief discussion regarding the significance of Baptist ecclesiology, Henry Cook states, quote, "This is the fundamental Baptist position. With this belief in the primacy of the New Testament, Baptists always begin, and from it they draw all their conclusions. Based upon their distinctive biblical authority, the procedure of Baptists is to, quote, draw inferences for the practice of the church. The practice of baptism is considered a theological derivative of biblical authority. The search for scriptural baptism is nothing more than the application for these Baptists of biblical authority. Baptism for them, baptism by immersion, is for them the consistent application of the all-sufficiency of the Scriptures. Infant or paedo-baptism is rejected on the basis that biblical authority propounds believers' baptism. Other Baptist distinctive writings derive the sole competency from the distinctive of biblical authority. Based on this fundamental principle, Baptists are compelled to enumerate some of the inferences which they have deduced, the first of which is soul competency and the immediacy of the soul in communion with God. The concept of soul competency is viewed as an integral outflow of biblical authority. God's Word as religious authority suggests that each person has the right and the responsibility to approach God and appeal to Scripture. Issues of individual responsibility and duty are stipulated as corollaries to biblical authority. Soul competency is construed as a viable and logical expression of the contention as the Bible as the sole authority for faith and practice. Baptist distinctives prior to the 20th century all shared this core distinctive of biblical authority. A shift in this expression occurred early in the 20th century. Although many Baptists continued to assert biblical authority as the primary distinctive, others began to argue for the authoritative role of individual autonomous religious experience prior or equal to the authority of the Bible. The first major work to argue for a redefining of the distinctive identity of Baptists was E.Y. Mullins in his work, The Axioms of Religion. Mullins elevated religious experience to an authoritative role that had previously been reserved in these writings for the Bible. This is not to say that issues of religious experience did not exist within Baptist distinctive genre. It certainly did. Mullins rather elevated this trait to a prominent role with religious authority, thereby infusing into the distinctive theological process a new interpretive distinctive. The axioms of religion marked a significant shift in the prevailing understanding of the theological distinctives of Baptists and provided an impetus for a second defining distinctive from which some Baptists would elaborate their unique theological identity. Now, I need to qualify this somewhat. Mullins was not the first to bring up the issue of religious individual autonomous experience. Others were doing it. And he was not the first to write about it. In fact, there is a monograph by Walter Rauschenbusch that chronologically predates Mullins' Axioms of Religion. The significance of Mullins, though, is in the process of intentionality. He stipulates a new interpretation for the Baptist faith. And so I suggest that Mullins is the point of convergence, the point of shifting for this birthing of a new distinctive tradition. Now, I know Mullins is sometimes the favorite whipping boy for various groups. I do not share beating up on Mullins. I have a lot of affinity and appreciation for his theological contributions and for his Baptist statesmanship in his day. I am not alone, though, in identifying that Mullins did mark a point of shift within the theologizing, particularly within Southern Baptist life. In a moment, I'm going to describe a tradition that flowed out of the Mullins tradition, and I am convinced that if he were alive today, and I were to say, Dr. Mullins, here are the offspring or the descendants of your first work, he would not recognize that their contributions as accurately reflecting what he was suggesting. That the children have fallen far from the tree, or the acorn has fallen far from the tree, so to speak. Certain Baptist distinctives advocate an experiential authority as the primary or defining distinctive. Works that argue for Christian experience as the primary distinctive also view the other distinctive traits as the logical application of this core distinctive. Christian experience or individual autonomous religious experience is for them the foundational premise. All other distinctive doctrinal formulations are the natural theological outflow of this emphasis upon experience. This phenomenon is intentional and is often stated as such. The derivation of other Baptist distinctives from the experiential premise of soul competency is illustrated by Walter Rauschenbusch, to whom I've already mentioned. After stipulating individual religious experience as the distinctive theological trait of Baptists, Rauschenbusch applies this principle by asserting that experience is our sole requisite for all matters regarding faith and practice. It is fundamental for all aspects of church life. The baptism of believers, then, is for Rauschenbusch the application of this emphasis upon religious experience, not biblical authority. For Rauschenbusch, this notion is determinative for his understanding of congregational polity. Why do you do it, Rauschenbusch? Because of experience. Why do we have ministry? Because of experience. Why do we evangelize? Because of experience. They flow out of his understanding. A more contemporary example is Walter Sheridan's work on Baptist distinctives, The Baptist Identity for Fragile Freedoms. Following Martin Marty, and why he does this, I don't know. If you're going to do Baptist theology, why do you appeal to a Lutheran? I don't get it, but he does. Following Martin Marty, Sheridan asserts that the notion of individual freedom is, quote, the stackpole around which Baptist convictions develop. He then uses the notion of individual freedom to address the topics that he labels Bible freedom, soul freedom, church freedom, and religious freedom. Other distinctives in this category apply their understanding of religious experience in various ways. Soul competency is posited as the unifying principle for all distinctive aspects of Baptist theology. No doctrine is more Baptistic, this group says, than soul competency. And no doctrine is more determinative of the theological peculiarities of Baptists than this concept. Soul competency for them is, quote, the principle which has shaped our Baptist history, dictated our attitude toward the Scriptures, formulated our conceptions of the church, interpreted for us the meaning of the two New Testament ordinances, made us champions of soul liberty, sent us everywhere as missionaries of the cross, and given us a peculiar fitness to meet the spiritual needs of the age in which we are now beginning to live. For them, soul competency necessitates a correlative of biblical revelation. In other words, they derive their understanding of the nature of biblical authority or the Bible from soul competency. Let me skip over this and move on to another issue. The evidence from the materials examined reveals several aspects regarding writings on Baptist distinctives. First, identification and the establishment of a core or interpretive distinctive is a part of this process. The writings on Baptist distinctives reflect a general propensity to distill the issues or peculiarities of Baptist theology to a determinative theological concept. Second, writings on Baptist distinctives are the application of this core distinctive. The primary distinctive is applied logically and consistently by the formulators in order to shape the other components. This methodology demonstrates that Baptist distinctives are as much a method of theology as much as a defined body of literature. The evidence suggests that writings on Baptist distinctives contain a theological hermeneutic. They begin with a primary distinctive, and then this primary distinctive is used to formulate the other components. Diversity of arrangement and nuance of application do exist. Baptist distinctives, however, reflect shared components that are common to distinctive writings, and these components are determinative for determining this distinctive genre. The theological components, while similar in their overall content, do contain differing nuances of emphasis. Baptist distinctives should therefore be regarded as a form of confessional theology. Several criteria exist which permit me to categorize this genre thus. I have a discussion in my book on different understandings of confessional theology. I won't belabor that. If you're interested in that, you can get the book and read it for yourself. I'm identifying one particular understanding of confessional theology. Let me identify real quickly three aspects of this confessional theological identity. Confessional theology is a discipline that has a cognizant awareness of a particular theological community in which you do theology. A confessional theology intentionally, therefore, formulates its doctrinal expression within this denominational identity. A second aspect is that confessional theology is analytic. That is, it identifies its own epistemological basis for its theology, and it identifies the epistemological basis for other Christian denominations for their distinctive theology. Confessional theology grapples with the inner workings and perspectives of its own heritage, as well as the heritage of other communities of faith. Confessional theology is also dialectic. The process contrasts and critiques the theological premises of other religious communities in light of its own. The results of this process can be varied. The dialectic may result in simply describing the differences void of critical judgments. It may conclude by advocating the superiority of one confessional tradition over the deficiencies of another, or it may opt for a synthesis of the two. Based upon this criteria, Baptist distinctive writings can rightfully and should be classified as a form of confessional theology. By use of this definition, these writings reflect a distinct awareness of being Baptist. In other words, they know we're doing this as Baptists within our denomination. They speak with a cognizant awareness of their heritage and attempt to preserve the distinctive theological identity of Baptists. The intention may or may not be stated explicitly, but they do it. Baptist distinctives also conform to the analytic dynamic of confessional theology. The analytic component investigates and identifies the epistemological basis or religious authority for Baptists and for other Christian denominations. And Baptist distinctive writings are confessional in their dialectic with other denominations. The dialectic typically, if not always, contrasts the unique theology of Baptists with others. In this dialectic, Baptists never seek a synthesis. And being Baptists, they're never just going to describe what they believe and what someone else believes and leave it alone. Being Baptists, when they get through with the dialectic, they're going to say the Baptist position is the better position or the superior position. Two distinctive traditions. The theological components and hermeneutics of this genre further disclose revelations in the quest to discover who we are, what our identity is as Baptists. Two understandings or traditions of Baptist distinctives have emerged within Baptist life, particularly within the Southern Baptist Convention. Both of these traditions have existed side by side for most of the 20th century. In the last few decades, however, the differences between the two groups have grown so great that they no longer appear able to coexist. These differences exist due to the manner in which they identify the core distinctive and which they shape the rest of our Baptist distinctive identity. Works that affirm the primacy of biblical authority as the core distinctive develop and interpret the other distinctives in light of this organizing principle. This method reflects the Protestant Reformation tradition of sola scriptura. In fact, many of the authors of these writings believe that the Baptists and their distinctive theology were the logical outcome to the Reformation assumption of the preeminence of biblical authority. Those works that affirm the primacy of biblical authority I categorize as the Reformation tradition or Reformation Baptist distinctives. Writings on Baptist distinctives that affirm religious experience as the core distinctive embrace the Enlightenment assumption of individual autonomy. This profound emphasis upon the individual is often expressed in terms of individual freedoms, individual rights, individual morality, or ministry. This strand of distinctives can be called the Enlightenment Baptist distinctive tradition. And as I've already mentioned, I identify the birth of this with the axioms of religion. Writings on Baptist distinctives have a unique ordering that affects the theological process. For example, the Reformation tradition first asserts the primacy of biblical authority. These works construct a Baptist doctrine of the church based upon the Bible. Religious experience in this category is a byproduct of believing the Bible as the source for faith and practice and constructing a New Testament church upon biblical revelation. The Reformation tradition affirms the role of the individual and the accountability of the individual before God, but it does so in subordination to biblical authority. The Enlightenment tradition has, over a period of time, inverted this view. Following Mullins, who I think Mullins sort of waffled back and forth depending upon where you read and the point he was trying to make, but they appealed to Mullins, so I give them their due. Following Mullins, this tradition moved from a biblical authority core that shaped church life and experience to a religious experience core that shapes their understanding of biblical authority in church life. This distinctive core in this tradition forms the basis of their understanding of the doctrine of the church. That is, the church emphasizes the individual, sometimes to the neglect of the corporate life. The Bible becomes a repository of information for individual spiritual blessings, individual Christian living, individual religious freedoms, rather than an authoritative revelation for a community of born-again believers covenanting together for the extension of the kingdom of God. Religious experience replaced biblical authority as the core distinctive that interpreted the other distinctives. In the earliest stages of Baptist life, the only distinctive tradition that existed was the Reformation tradition. At the beginning of the 20th century, the Enlightenment tradition was birthed. These two traditions initially shared similar theological convictions. However, over time, the two distinctive traditions have grown further and further apart in conviction and emphasis. As you know, these two traditions still exist and thrive today. The Reformation tradition continues to demonstrate theological stability and historical continuity. Based upon past historical continuity and theological stability, the Reformation tradition of Baptist distinctives will likely continue to flourish and to formulate a distinctive identity for Baptists in the present and the future. This tradition provides a large segment of Baptists with a theological connection to their past and strong theological identity for their future. If the past is any indication, this tradition will continue to exist and thrive and shape the identity of Baptists in years to come. The Enlightenment tradition has in recent days experienced a loss of theological stability and historical continuity. The exaggerated emphasis upon the individual, upon autonomous religious experience, makes theological cohesiveness almost impossible. Further, this tradition appears to be fragmenting within itself. Writings in this tradition not only have decreasing similarities with the Reformation tradition or with Mullins, they have fewer similarities with each other in the same tradition. Compare Sheridan's work with the work edited by Alan Neely, Being Baptist Means Freedom, and look at how they are different yet claim to be similar. The future prospects are not so bright in my assessment of this Enlightenment tradition of Baptist distinctives. Based upon the appearing growing fragmentation, this tradition will likely either continue to digress into theological oblivion or birth a new theological perspective, continuing its drift from an historic Baptist identity. This tradition will either eventually reject any connection with Baptists or further try to redefine what it means to be a Baptist and attempt to do so in unbaptistic terms. Such a redefinition would, in my estimation, eliminate any historical or theological claim to the name Baptist. There was a recent, it was several years ago now, thing circulating, written by Curtis Freeman and others, entitled Re-envisioning Baptist Identity, a Manifesto for Baptist Communities in North America, which they want to say, let's take Baptist identity to the next level. The process for doing this continues. Divisions within Southern Baptist life, I think, in fact, that's more than think, I've convinced myself, have an affinity with these two divisions. In other words, the recent controversy within Southern Baptist life is a reflection of the conflict between these two traditions. Those who are often described theologically as conservatives tend to represent the Reformation tradition of emphasizing biblical authority. Moderates are those who are more comfortable with some form of religious experience as the foundational premise, tend to represent the Enlightenment distinctive tradition. I don't think these two distinctive traditions can account for all the divisions that have erupted within the controversy, but I do think that they help us interpret in great measure a major source for the controversy. Everything that glitters is not gold, or not all Baptists are Baptists. My analysis lends itself to a conclusion that Baptists have a definitive confessional theological tradition. This confessional theological tradition is a clearly identifiable genre and is comprised of certain theological components that must be present in order for a writing to be classified as a work on Baptist distinctives: polemical, epistemological, ecclesiological, and volitional components. The components share doctrinal emphases that are present to some degree in this genre. Thus, the expressions Baptist confessional theology or Baptist confessional tradition are accurate and appropriate phrases to describe this phenomenon. Since Baptists do possess a confessional theological tradition, several observations are apparent regarding its significance. First, this distinctive tradition may be used to identify and define the theological essence of Baptists. Baptist is more than just a name. I think that'd make a great title for a name of a book or something like that. Baptists are known by clearly defined and historically established theological components. Baptists are more than just adherents of religious freedom, advocates of baptism by immersion, practitioners of congregational polity. Baptists are those individuals and churches that embrace to some degree all the core theological components that have been defined herein as common to these writings. For a church or a person simply to advocate one or two of these theological components does not designate that entity as a Baptist. Deviation beyond these identified components is a deviation beyond the historically established boundaries that define Baptist distinctives. Another observation is that Baptists do possess a continuity of theological identity. Baptist distinctives reflect diversity of emphasis in doctrinal expressions. The dissimilarities may be shaped by various historical, contextual, and theological considerations. The differences are transcended, however, by greater theological concerns. Baptist distinctives share common theological conceptions that are present in all these writings. In other words, Baptists in the 20th century, or 21st century now, share certain common doctrinal convictions espoused by Baptists in previous centuries. When understood in this way, we can claim to have a common theological tradition that binds all Baptists together in a common identity. Even persons like Mullins who propose a new interpretation of Baptist identity cannot escape these common components true of all Baptists. They may attempt to change the nuances of many or rearrange the components, but they cannot change the essential nature of these components and still remain within the confessional tradition of Baptists. The fact that Baptists adhere to certain distinctive traits is an attestation to the doctrinal adequacy of these traits. These convictions transcend cultural and historical differences and bind Baptists around these established doctrinal convictions. A third observation is that the theological commonality shared among Baptists in no way diminishes the great theological diversity found within Baptist theology. This continuous theological tradition strengthens the notion that Baptist distinctives provide a common identity while simultaneously providing a sound theological basis from which to address contextual, historical, and theological concerns that confront differing Baptists in differing times and contexts. In other words, a Baptist confessional tradition provides doctrinal continuity so that Baptists can formulate their doctrinal conceptions within the well-established parameters of the Baptist confessional tradition. This confessional tradition likewise provides enormous flexibility by allowing Baptists to address specific cultural concerns and contemporary issues theologically while permitting the formulators to remain within the Baptist confessional tradition. Two challenges face us today by way of conclusion. One is to be faithful to the heritage that is uniquely Baptist. Those who claim the name of Baptist have a rich theological history. Part of our Baptist identity includes those tenets that we share with all Christians, as has already been discussed. We should recognize that we are one part of God's overall kingdom work. As such, we should seek any and every opportunity to join together in God's kingdom work with those who believe in the great truths of the Christian faith. But part of our heritage also includes those traits that define us as Baptist. We must appreciate the unique identity forged by those who discovered and refined these distinctives. I believe as Baptists we have an obligation to represent accurately and faithfully our confessional tradition. To misrepresent or to modify these tenets that have historically represented our distinctive identity is to belittle the labor and sacrifice of those who have gone before us. The second challenge before present-day Baptists is the task of articulating our distinctive identity to our contemporary world. This must be done with care and caution. On the one hand, if we are not careful, we can accommodate our distinctives to current theological trends to the point that we change the essence of the Baptist confessional tradition. On the other hand, if we are not sensitive to cultural concerns, then we run the risk of unintelligibly communicating our theological identity. The present culture will neither understand nor appreciate the contribution that we can make to ministry and church concerns. As our Baptist forebears have taught us, our Baptist distinctives can do both. They can faithfully embody the great truths that have shaped us as part of God's kingdom people. They are dynamic enough that they can speak to any culture or context and do so in a way that thoughtfully, critically, and prophetically engages the concerns of the culture and time. The distinctive theology of Baptists is greatly needed today. I believe, and I may get in trouble for this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I believe when Baptist distinctives are properly understood and applied, you have a healthy church and a healthy ministry. It remains to be seen whether or not Baptists will rise to the occasion to reclaim the theological heritage in order to shape our ministry and to engage our culture that is sophisticated and contemporary, yet ancient and pagan. Only time will tell if the people called Baptists are up to this distinctive challenge. And with that, I conclude. Thank you. I think we have time for a few